May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mike Story, and today I represent the appellants, Tom and Ruth Ecker, and Jim and Rosemary Sledge, whose homes were damaged when several feet of flood waters entered their basements on June 20th, 2014. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal if possible. The appellants sued the Sanitary Improvement District 237, its engineer E&A Consulting, and the City of La Vista for their role in negligently designing, implementing, and approving a stormwater management plan that resulted in the flooding of the appellants' basements. The only common defense on appeal is whether the June 20th storm was such an extraordinary force of nature that it was the sole proximate cause of the flood, free from concurrent negligence from the defendants, also known as an act of God. With that in mind, at issue on appeal is whether summary judgment in favor of the appellees was proper when there are admitted or undisputed acts of negligence and conflicting expert testimony as to whether those acts of negligence caused or contributed to the flooding on June 20th, 2014.
And if you lose on the proximate cause issue, is that crucial to your case?
Yes, Your Honor. If there is no genuine issue of material fact as to whether or not the alleged negligent acts of the appellees did not cause damage, it would be fatal to the claim.
Well, what about if there was a 100-year storm? What does the record say about that?
Okay, so a 100-year storm, or an act of God, under Nebraska law is an extraordinary act that cannot be anticipated, that excuses essentially the negligence of defendants because but for the storm, nothing would have occurred. Or in, stated another way, that the acts of negligence of the defendants did not contribute in any way, and the case law on this is favorable, in any way to the flood. Now, there's a couple issues with the act of God affirmative defense. First, it's not established that this was an act of God so extraordinary as to sever their proximate cause. First, it could have been anticipated. There's only one expert out of four experts that testified as to whether or not it was anticipated, and that was John Adler, an expert for E&A, and he testified that it could have been anticipated. The factual record also establishes that this storm of 6.6 inches of rain, which admittedly is a lot of rain, could have been anticipated and was in fact anticipated by E&A's model in this case. Now, E&A designed in 2010 a berm. After realizing it made a huge mistake in 2004 by allowing these homes to be placed in a flood zone, a 50-year flood zone, which everyone agrees and is undisputed is a violation of engineering standards. But in 2010, when they created this model to now create a band-aid solution, if you will, of putting an earthen berm behind the homes of the appellants, they used what's called the Soil Conservation Services method of determining what a 100-year event was. And that method used 6.7 inches of rain to determine what a 100-year event was. The fact that this storm, accepting the evidence as true, is only 6.6 inches creates a genuine issue of material fact as to both negligence and as to proximate cause and the act of God defense, because under one of the credible sources, according to Westergaard, who is the E&A engineer, credible sources for determining whether or not it violated a 100-year event, it was a 6.6 inch storm and not 6.7 inches, which is qualified. So that creates a genuine issue of material fact, especially in light of the standard of review for this court, which is on a summary judgment, which is to give all reasonable inferences and the benefit of doubt to the appellants. In addition to that evidence of whether or not this even qualifies as an extraordinary act. So I first posit that it doesn't. The second element is there has to be proof or evidence that the storm and not the negligence of the defendants contributed to the flooding. Now, this is disputed by all four experts. So our expert, the appellant's expert, is a registered professional engineer, and he testifies no less than three times in his deposition that if the negligent acts of the appellees did not occur and they had built the wall or the earthen berm in the way that it was intended, the flooding would not occur. Now, one of the areas that I think best exemplifies this for the court is the idea of storage capacity versus flow capacity. And this is not addressed by any of the other experts, but George Bryan, and it is undisputed, testified that the model talks about storage capacity. So it backs up when it hits this ravine, it goes down the creek in the valley. It gets to a culvert and the water backs up. The model is intended to determine at what a 100-year event, how high that water gets relative to sea level. That's what was determined. The problem is it did not take in consideration the flow of the water as it entered into the ravine or the creek area or the basin. And what George Bryan testifies is the flooding actually occurred at 9:15 p.m. And that's from Rosie Sledge's deposition, and that's undisputed. At that point, the water overtopped the berm, and the storm was a less than 25-year event. Now, this creates numerous issues of fact, genuine issues of material fact, to be determined by a jury, such as, if the wall was properly constructed, why did it come overtopped at a 25-year event? That alone creates the inference that is necessary. But it also dovetails into his opinion as to why the flooding actually occurred. And that is because the flooding occurred because the water, as it ran down the hill, overtopped the berm. Now, the reason why that's problematic or negligent is because when E&A designed the berm, they built it at 1,082.5 feet above sea level. It didn't take into consideration the area around it, which is the ground levels as it is. So at the bottom of the hill, the berm is taller than it is behind the appellant's home. So that flow of water as it rushed down overtopped the berm and caused the flooding. Now, testimony is not disputed in the record. Furthermore, that establishes, and there's testimony from Mr. Bryan in his deposition, that had they built the berm, which is a Band-Aid solution in the first place, high enough to stop the free flow of that water, it could have and would have stopped the flooding in this instance. And that creates a genuine issue, a material fact for a jury to decide, not for the trial court on the record.
Go ahead.
Before your time runs out, would you talk about the argument about failure to cite to the record?
Yes, Your Honor. Part of the issue in this case is that two appellees, ENA and SID 237, submitted motions for summary judgment but did not submit in accordance with the new Rule 25-1332 and the local rule of Sarpy County, an annotated statement of facts. And in doing so, the appellants argued that they were prejudiced by the court's decision to grant them summary judgment because it effectively denied my clients the opportunity to rebut specific statements of fact as to negligence of those defendants and the proximate cause. The appellants had the opportunity to rebut BNSF's argument extensively and was successful in doing that, but by not following the rules and not providing the court with the factual basis for the motion.
Did you reserve that argument?
I think I did, Your Honor. At the hearing, and Judge Estera accepted the evidence, and we went through the exhibits, and he asked if everyone had submitted briefs. At that point, I said, no, Your Honor, two of the parties have not submitted briefs. He immediately ends the hearing and then adjourns it and says takes it under advisement. At that point, I think all the parties were expecting oral argument and were prepared for oral argument, and it was denied. Now, in order to preserve that, I did file a motion for reconsideration and raise that at the earliest time possible with the judge, which was then heard by the Honorable Stephanie Martinez, which I believe preserves that argument. But I would suggest to the court that even regardless of that, the fact is that there are genuine issues of material fact. And this court's precedent in Young v. Govier says when there are conflicting expert testimony, and this expert testimony in this case is not just between the appellant's expert and the appellee's experts, but interchangeably, there is numerous issues of fact that need to be decided by a jury or the fact finder and not by the court on a motion for summary judgment.
Which brings up one question vis-a-vis a jury. Is a sanitary and improvement district a political subdivision?
The sanitary improvement district is not, now that's a good question. ENA is not, we would not qualify for a jury trial. I don't know if the sanitary improvement district as I stand here today would be part of the jury trial or whether they would be a bench trial along with the city of La Vista. And I'm trying to remember on our letter, political type court claims act letter, whether or not we include SID 237, and I apologize for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. To Mr. Scaglione.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. May it please the court, appearing today with me is John Manson on behalf of the engineering firm ENA Consulting, Jerry Fredrickson on behalf of the city of La Vista, John Savoto on behalf of the SID 237. If I could have a 7-minute warning, please. I'd like to address two quick issues, and I'll start with the briefing, which is particular to the SID and ENA. Judge Martinez specifically addressed this issue on the briefing at the transcript at 263, and she ruled that there was no prejudice because of the lack of briefing or separate offer of evidence. That ruling has not been assigned as error to this court. I believe that ends the briefing issue. Number two, NBRF Stat 25-13-32 was not in effect. It was effective August 24th. We filed the brief just in time, August 18th. So that is 6 days before the effective date of the statute. So we're not talking about a statutory inconsistency here. The local rules were viewed by the local judge. The local judge had discretion to order more briefing or to rule without the briefing.
When did the hearing occur in relation to the effective date of the statute?
After.
All right.
So, but in any event, even under the statute, the judge still has a variety of options when faced with a brief or record cites that don't comply with the statute, including ruling on the summary judgment. That authority is expressly granted to the district judge to make the ruling over the top of any deficiencies. He did. Judge Martinez reviewed it, and it's not been assigned as error. I'd like to discuss the causation. All of this talk of a 100-year flood, of settlement, of flow capacity, of storage capacity, of a rough channel that wasn't cleared, all of those components, whether they're in dispute or not, must result in one opinion. What should the height of the berm been designed to? So we may not agree on what is a 100-year flood. We may not agree on what the settlement is. But an engineer, to prove causation, their engineer had to say, the design height should have been X, and if it had been X, it would have contained the height of 1,083.7 feet. Their expert, taking everything into consideration, he said maybe 3 inches for settlement, maybe a foot to a foot and a half for the roughness in the channel, and he commented on the flow and the storage. He never set the required duty height at a height above or at 1,083.7 feet. Thus, he had to admit, and he did admit, that it would have flooded in any event. So, for example, everyone, there's no dispute the height should have been 1,081.6 feet. The water came in 2 feet plus over that height. Their expert said, well, you might account for this, you might account for this. He never got up to the height. We were always between 6 and 18 inches above the height their expert said it should be, factoring in all. So it doesn't matter whether there was a 100-year storm or not. The 100-year storm is used for a threshold to set the height. And we are simply talking about the height of the water, whether it was a cresting wave, the flow capacity, or whether it was the storage capacity. If it was over, they had to show the height should have been high enough to contain both. Their evidence doesn't show that. Act of God was not at issue. Act of God is an affirmative defense. Judge Zestera said at transcript 239 that the plaintiff failed to present evidence to demonstrate it was entitled to judgment. It failed on its claim. We never got to the affirmative defense of an act of God. We never got there because causation failed.
What does act of God add to the analysis that a court has to conduct in any case of causation? Does it add anything?
I think it adds nothing to causation. I think there could be an argument it may affect duty because there's a discussion of anticipation. But again, the duty is, so what was the duty to design to what height? So they still would have to come forward and they say, well, is it anticipated or not anticipated? The anticipation is what you design for. And without a design height high enough to get to 1,083.7 feet, it doesn't matter whether it was an act of God, an act of nature, a UFO disposing water, or a rain event. It doesn't matter the source. Those sources may set anticipation to set the design height, and they don't have an expert to get the height of design high enough to contain the water. And without that, Judge Zestera and Judge Martinez recognized the failure on this one element of the claim. And I would urge the court to read the citations of Mr. Bryan, their expert, who repeatedly admitted that there would have been flooding. The design only needed to be designed to a 100-year flood. This was designed to a 100-year flood, and this event could not have been contained. It would have flooded anyways. And an expert's admission is taken as a party's admission, and this case was ripe for a legal determination by the judge that the evidence was insufficient, and no juror could controvert that. I will yield to others here. I would say the SID's position is clear that they're not a political subdivision in their view, and if you'd like to hear more argument on that, Mr. Sabota is prepared to do that. Let me check with counsel here. Anything to add?
They are.
I'm sorry, they are. I misstated that. That's why I should not be speaking on behalf of the SID. Thank you for that correction. So with that, we're happy to answer any questions on causation.
Did Mr. Bryan, at other times in his testimony, express the view that if the berm had been higher, the flooding would have been presented? Is his testimony equivocal?
What Mr. Bryan did is made a lot of observations. He talked about settlement. He said, well, when ENA designed for 1,081.6 inches, it should have accounted for some settling. We said, how much? 3 inches. So we started adding up the consequence of all of his observations. What he did not do, and you will not find it in the record, is because of settling, because of an unclear channel, because of flow capacity, the engineer should have designed it this high. He never reached that conclusion. We tried to pull it out of him and said, so how much for settling? 3 inches. How much for the flow capacity? A foot, maybe a foot and a half. Clearing the channel, foot, maybe a foot and a half. It's unclear. It is their burden to come forward and say, factoring in each of these elements, the height should have been X, the water was here, it would have been contained. Had he said that with clarity, on an element they have the burden of proof on, they would have at least gotten past this element. We could have addressed other elements and affirmative defenses. They never got past it. You simply can't throw out observations and have a consequence to what the design should have been because of that observation. That doesn't create an issue of fact. It creates an element of interesting discussion. But unless they tie it to a design height, it's of no consequence.
Did you ask the expert to tie it to a design height in the questioning?
We didn't need to. It's their burden. They issued a report. It's not in the report. When we were at the deposition, we did. And we also asked, some of the reasonableness of the calculations here. He had a lot of those observations were not supported.
Of course, on summary judgment, we wouldn't be talking
about it. We agree. And that's why I'm saying we may disagree on his observations. Right, but they don't create issues of fact until he says the consequence of my observation is they should have had it at 1,084 feet above sea level, and that would have contained the flow capacity and the storage capacity. He never reached that conclusion.
Is that a reasonable inference from his testimony?
No.
Did he need to say it out loud?
He did. When he said it would have flooded anyways, this event, even designed to the 100-year flood with all of my added settlement, this, that, and the other, would have flooded anyways. He made that admission. We quoted it. So whatever the consequence in components, when he caps it off, it would have flooded anyways, despite a design to address these events. He can't get around that. It was a fatal admission. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 1 second, Mr. Story.
2 points. First, he assumes, or the appellees assume, that the berm height is the only allegation of negligence. There's two others. The first is that the home should never have been placed there in the first place due to the negligence of ENA, which is admitted in the 2010 drainage study. If the homes had not been placed in the 50-year flood zone, the flooding would not have occurred. That's proximate cause. Second, there is evidence from from Razavin, who is the BNSF expert, that the berm was not a prudent design in the first place. Appellees are assuming that the berm was the only solution that could have prevented this flooding, and that's not the case. But third is, this is a conflict of expert testimony. George Bryan, on three different instances, and I will quote the line and page for you, 137.21, He says, but increased storage, better in capacity on the inflow channel, they may have been lowered the water surface to the point there wouldn't have been flooding even with a bigger than 100-year storm. Page 111, he says, if they had done what I said, I think it would have been okay. And I'm paraphrasing that. And then on page 96 and 3, had the berm been elevated to the point that it, when he's talking about the flow of the floodwater, didn't overtop it, I'm not convinced that is true. I mean, if the berm was high enough to protect against the floodwater going down the channel, this may not have occurred. There is clearly an expert testimony here regarding whether or not the berm height was a proximate cause. And he specifically outlines in his report the numerous reasons why that berm was insufficient, and is for a jury to decide, not for the appellees and not for the trial court, whether or not that berm and that negligence was a contributory cause of the flooding on that day. And for those reasons, and for the reasons I fully articulated in my brief, I believe that all three, I believe that this case should be remanded, reversed and remanded for trial as to all three appellees. And if there's no further questions, I will concede. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for today. The court is adjourned and you are excused.